supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it's an issue many of you ask about. You've got all these piles of compost around you. Are they all safe to use? How can you tell which one is best? We'll have some surprisingly informative answers to those questions after lots of your fabulously informative phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Karen. Where are you?
I'm in Indiana, in a small rural town called La Fountain. But it is really spelled like LaFontaine.
Now, what can we do for Karen?
I've had a lot of flooding. You know, this is an area that's been getting an immense amount of rain. And my garden got flooded. I have a ditch, open ditch behind my house that takes in drainage from fields and could be even some sewage from older homes and livestock runoff. I'm kind of at the end of a long ditch. Well, it couldn't handle this all this rain one night, and it flooded my organic garden. And my question is, at what point can I consider it organic again?
Well, organic is only a term that would come into play if you were selling produce. When somebody wants to sell more than $2,500 of produce a year and wants to claim organic certification, their farm has to meet essentially two requirements. One, that no man-made chemicals were used for 3 years. And then second, that they do things to better the soil, that they improve the soil, they encourage beneficial insects. So organic certification is, I'm not using anything toxic, and I'm doing all these things to increase biodiversity, have healthier soil and something like that. In California, there are huge issues about irrigation water used in farming, and it's really hard to find clean water, especially during the drought right now. So there is a lot of controversy and a lot of argument going on about whether an organic farm is still organic if they use compromised irrigation water. So what's in your garden?
Tomatoes, a lot of squashy food, zucchini, summer squash, butternut.
And when was it underwater?
Oh, overnight, let's say.
And the plants did not die?
Oh, no.
Plants that are underwater for more than 24 hours are probably going to die.
Okay, so that's, maybe it wasn't that long.
That's a good sign. Now, are you growing in raised beds or flat earth?
Flat earth.
Okay. So what do you think you should do for next season, Karen?
Move my garden.
Well, yes, your garden, if this is going to happen, your garden should be at the highest point on your property that gets enough sun. But if you build raised beds, what often happens during these flooding episodes is the water only impacts the lanes in between the raised beds frames, and your plants are protected from the overflow of the water.
Okay.
The important thing now, if you think there were toxins or fecal matter in that water, is that you not touch the soil with bare hands.
Okay, I wear gloves, cotton gloves.
Well, no, you got to go out. I would go to the local store and get some baseball batting gloves.
Okay.
They fit very tight on your hands. They're inexpensive. They're easy to find. They're leather. They're highly protective. The danger is you getting some of these organisms through a cut or a scrape or something like that. So you don't want to touch the soil with your bare hands. And if you haven't had one recently, you might want to consider getting a tetanus shot.
I'm current, so I should be fine.
Good. There's less danger to your plants. especially if they didn't show any signs of wilting after the flood, they came through okay. But again, if this is going to happen again and again and again, yes, move the entire garden to an area of higher ground and or build raised beds so that the water doesn't get into the soil the plants are growing in.
Okay. I was late putting out my square foot gardening, and I'm not sure I got the formula perfectly okay. So maybe that's some of the problem with that.
Mel's mix, essentially, for his square foot gardening is get rid of all the dirt that you already have and then fill that hole with a combination of peat moss, vermiculite, perlite, and good quality compost. Essentially, make it a big container garden. You have a lot of wiggle room on the ingredients.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck, Karen.
Thank you very much.
All right. You take care.
Okay, thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Paul, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show. Listen every Saturday morning. It's a great way to get up and going. To make a long story short, we planted a line of four ornamental pear trees in Wildwood Crest, New Jersey, which is, of course, kind of sandy soil. We planted them about maybe 20, 25 feet apart. Big holes, lots of topsoil and peat moss. And three of the four are doing very well. They're nice and tall and bushy. One of them is just not doing as well. It's not too bad, but it's just not doing as well as the other three. And I wonder if you have any cure for that.
How long have the trees been in the ground?
About 10 years.
Oh, okay. And you didn't read our article on how to plant trees first, right?
I think I did not.
Yeah. See, normally when you plant a tree, you want to dig a wide hole, not a deep one, and you want to refill the hole with the soil you removed. What happens, and the reason we warn people not to refill the hole with nice loose stuff, is then the roots of the tree stay inside that nice island. They don't go out into the cold, cruel world. And the best trees are the ones whose roots go out the furthest. So anyone who's planting in normal soil or clay, they should never put anything else in the planting hole. Fill it up with what you took out, and then the tree roots will be forced to grow out laterally, and you'll have a healthy tree. Now, as you say, I mean, I know Wildwood very well. Your soil is very sandy. Sandy soil works great when it's mixed half and half with compost. You use the word topsoil. Topsoil can be dicey. There's no legal definition of it. You can get real good quality, or you can get the clay that some developer scraped off to build houses. But mixing half compost and half sand, natural sand, if that's what you got, that creates a nice, loose, draining soil that has some nutrition. Where you made the mistake in all of your trees was putting peat moss in the hole. Peat moss is highly acidic. And didn't you notice that it was a lot like the sand, that it's also loose and everything?
Well, but it certainly isn't sand.
No, but it's not doing what you needed to do, which was to put some structure in the soil. Now, you planted Bradford pears, right?
I think so, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Bradford pears are the dirt cheapest trees to buy. They are the fastest growing. They are tremendously brittle, and they're very short-lived. It's really not recommended that people use these as landscaping trees anymore. They cause a lot of problems, and they need to be replaced, even if they were planted correctly, much earlier than other plants. Now, when you put these trees in the ground, could you still see the root flares, or did you bury them deeply?
I wouldn't say they're buried deeply. I think that as far as the planting went, except for, like you say, the peat moss, I don't think we did too bad a job of that. And like I say, three of them are doing very well. I'm just wondering if you have some type of a prescription for the one that isn't.
Why do you say it's not doing as well?
It's not as tall. and the leaves appear to be dry. They don't have the kind of robust.
But all three are planted in the same basic area. All three have access to the same amount of water. This one is not, for instance, growing in a low spot where water collects or where it would get the runoff from a treated lawn.
It's pretty flat.
Are they flat?
They're all about the same.
Are they mulched?
Yes.
With what?
A kind of a wood chip or a bark type of mulch.
All of your trees will do better if you get rid of that mulch and then give them all, replace it with a mulch of compost. Find some good yard waste compost. There are a lot of good municipal composting facilities in South Jersey near the shore. This wood mulch is death to all plants. Replace it with a mulch of 2 inches of rich black compost. Don't touch the trunks of the tree. Start at about 6 inches out, then go as far as you can. Where do you see how all of these puppies perk up?
Thank you very much, Mike. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir. Take care.
Take care.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at a farm-to-table event at the Spring City Library in Chester County on Friday evening, September 11th, and then at the Horsham Township Library on Wednesday evening, September 16th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to give your compost a screen test and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, are you worried that the local township or bulk compost from a landscaper might contain weed seeds or even worse, herbicide residues? Have you spread compost and now wonder if it's having a bad effect on your plants? We will teach you 2 easy tests that will always reassure you in the future that what you got is black gold and not the Black Death. After lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Diane, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Diane. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm right here in Center City, Philadelphia.
Whereabouts?
Well, it's not my personal situation, but I wanted to talk to you about Rittenhouse Square, which is one of our little treasures here in the city.
So what's wrong in Rittenhouse Square?
Well, the thing that I was concerned about is I've heard your numerous programs about over-mulching, and I walked through Rittenhouse Square not long ago and noticed that the way they had mulched the trees with a wood chip mulch, and also they mounded it around the trees and, of course, right up against the trunk. And I was just amazed that they actually did that. And I didn't know who was responsible for that. And I thought maybe with your expertise and your many resources, you could possibly find out who is responsible and re-educate them.
It's not just you. It's not just Philadelphia. It's not just Rittenhouse Square. Up and down the East Coast, you see this all the time. And unfortunately, you see it most often in public spaces, in parks, mm-hmm. college campuses, outside of courthouses. It's heartbreaking. The basic issue is landscapers are paid to use this material, and they're paid by the yard. So the more they use, the more they get paid. And quite honestly, the dead tree is not a bad thing to a landscaper. They may get the job of taking it down and replacing it. So it's a win-win situation for them. I spoke at a historic site in New Jersey a couple of weeks ago, and I know the landscaping people there. I've been there many years, and we're standing out talking, and I'm looking at these mulched trees. And he goes, I know, you should have seen them last week. And I go, what do you mean? He said the landscaper had it piled up like 6 inches high. He explained that they called them up, made them come out and pull it away, showed them the contract that said tree root flares need to be exposed, and they just won't do it. They refuse to do it. And I go, well, fire them then. And he goes, this is a state project. They were the lowest bidder. But it is very frustrating. We continue to accelerate the ineptitude levels of landscapers. The vast majority now are piling this mulch up simply because there's a monetary advantage to them. And so in Philadelphia, you want to talk to the city. There is a Fairmount Park Commission. I believe Rittenhouse Square is technically part of Fairmount Park. You also want to talk to PHS, the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, the people who put on the flower show, to see if they have any input. Yeah. In the city of Philadelphia, both the Bartlett Expert Tree Company and the Davy Care of Tree Company, they hold symposiums begging people not to do this. The University of Penn, there's an arboretum out there. They have the Mars Arboretum out in Chestnut Hill. There are endless resources that will say this is the worst thing you can do to a tree, but the landscapers keep doing it. And so I think it's time for guerrilla action. There has been so many great demonstrations in Rittenhouse Square, which I agree with you, is just like a sacred place in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I would organize this Friends of Rittenhouse Square or get a bunch of my friends together. I would go someplace and buy a case of baseball batting gloves. Everybody put them on and pull the mulch away from the trees. And you know how they have these little yard sale signs that people hate? We buy crappy houses, you know, that kind of thing. Make up little signs and put it there. Volcano mulch kills trees. I've already decided when I retire, that's all I'm going to do. I'm going to drive all throughout America and rescue trees from mulch. But complain to everyone. Tell everyone. Consider making up annoying signage. Call the parks department. Every city has places like this, and unfortunately, the people who do the work almost always, because of the laws, were low bidders and almost can't be stopped. But somebody has to speak up. The more people who speak up, the more chance we'll have change. Don't be afraid to take matters in your own hands.
No, I will go further with this. Yeah.
You know, St. Peter will count the trees you saved.
Yeah.
All right, take care.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Mayor. Where are you?
In Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia?
Correct.
Okay.
I bought a plant from a nursery years ago, Morden's Gleam, a non-invasive lithrum. And they were beautiful. I bought several of them. They have died off except for one puny one. This past year, I had tree limbs removed and cut a hedge down. And the one remaining puny one has come up very full and bushy and pretty. But it is definitely non-invasive because it doesn't self-seed. And it was advertised as non-invasive. I don't know why they're outlawed now, but nurseries cannot sell them. And I want to increase my stock of lithrum. How do I do it?
So you're even avoiding using the name that's going to bring the villagers with the pitchforks down on your house, right? We're talking about purple loosestrife.
Right.
Which is a beautiful plant that I happen to like the look of. But it is very aggressive, it is very invasive, and it takes over natural areas. It came over in ship's ballast, believe it or not. Now, all of these plants actually have a place in the wild, and purple loosestrife, one of the reasons it is, there's so much of it out there that people worry about it so much, is it is pollinated by bees. And it produces thousands of seeds per plant. So that's how the plant reproduces. It flowers. The flowers are pollinated by bees. The seeds drop, probably spread by birds. And before you know it, you've got a field of purple loosestrife next to your house. Now, I have never heard of a non-invasive loosestrife. And obviously yours barely survived, much less got invasive, right?
Correct.
Why do you think the others died off?
Because of lack of sun.
Oh, okay.
That's all because all of a sudden, with the increase in sun, this one just bloomed beautifully.
And it does.
And it was failing.
And it does flower.
It does flower. It has many spikes on it now.
Do bees come to your flowers?
Some. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What I would suggest, even though this is, quote, supposed to be seedless, just let it go. And at the end of the season, pay attention when the flowers fade and see if you can find any seed pods in there. I mean, yes, I know you were told it was seedless, that it would not reproduce. That's what they told Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. Oh, they're all females. They can't mate. Nature finds a way. Now, this is a herbaceous perennial. It dies back seemingly to the ground in the winter and then pops up again in the same spot, right?
Right.
Okay. So first thing I want you to do is collect some seeds. And then have you ever started seeds?
Yes, I have in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just keep the seeds dormant. Keep them cool and dry. Let them go through their dormant period. And in the spring, I would try to start them in a loose, light, soil-free mix that's kept moist on top of a heating pad and see what you get. Otherwise, as it is a herbaceous perennial, I would suggest that, and this is the first year it hasn't looked like Sick Little Willie, right?
Right.
Okay. So you just want to make sure it continues to get good sun. Don't feed it chemical fertilizers. Don't use any herbicides on lawns or any place near it. And let it achieve some biomass. If it continues to thrive over the next couple years, it may begin to spread naturally. If it doesn't, once the plant has achieved a pretty good size in the early spring, you can take it out of the ground and attempt to separate some of the root systems and replant those next to each other.
All right.
Okay.
Well, you've given me some ideas, and hopefully I can because they're so beautiful.
You got problems with a new car? Always take it back to the dealer, Mayor.
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
1-888-346-9499. Kate, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing just ducky. Kate, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
And where is Kate well?
In Media, Pennsylvania.
Well, I'm in media. I'm in radio. No. Media is a, you know, a funny name for a town just outside of Philly. All right, what can we do for Kate also in the media?
Well, I am very new at gardening, and I just kind of discovered your show. And my parents have tomato plants and herbs and spices growing in their backyard. And they, you know, they're getting older, my parents, not the plants. And they can't take care of them as well as they want to. And so they kind of put it on me now. And I don't know what to do with these tomato plants. They're growing out of control. I don't know. Someone told me to put them up on sticks. Someone says I got to buy covering for the animals. Other people are telling me to spray them for the animals so the animals won't eat them. Well, and I just want to know what the basics are.
Okay, that would be weird because I don't think you'd want to eat them after that.
Exactly.
Are the tomato plants in media?
Yes.
And they were put in the ground, you know,
in big terracotta pots.
Oh, they're in terracotta pots. Is that what they always do?
Yeah, that's what they've always done.
So they have no in-ground space?
Mm-mm.
Is there anything to support? You know, tomatoes are vines. They're not upright plants. So
right.
Without support, they will sprawl all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything supporting them?
Not yet, no.
Okay. I'm not figuring out how this has worked for them in the past.
I haven't seen too many tomatoes grow, but they like growing them.
Well,
now I want to produce.
They're not really. I mean, this is the kind of garden where the Red Cross shows up with a lawyer. How big are these terracotta pots?
The pots are probably about 2.5 feet in diameter. They're big.
Oh, okay, good. All right, and we have no idea what they've been filled with for this season, so we're stuck with it. And the plants are, at this point, they're probably a couple of feet long, right?
Yeah, about arm's length.
And are they just laying on the ground?
Well, I tried to put them up on, like, tie them with a nice, like, softer hemp onto a thick stick.
And, of course, you don't know the names of the plants or how tall they're going to grow or anything like that.
Nope.
Okay. So the basic answer is that tomatoes are best grown in the ground simply because they're going to get really tall, and you could use that 2.5 feet so that you didn't have to be reaching up 8 or 10 feet at the end of the season. So typically people plant them in the ground. When they plant the tomatoes, they plant them deeply because with tomatoes you go as low as you can. They grow auxiliary roots along the buried stem. And then, ideally, you have a tomato cage ready that will support the plant through the growing season. Now, obviously, you're playing catch-up ball. So your basic idea right now is not bad. Your most goal here is to be able to keep these plants from flopping over. And I will warn you that tying the continually developing vine to a stick, sooner or later, you're going to start snapping off big parts of the plant. So you say you have a stick. Do you have access to other sticks? How tall is the stick?
The stick's about 3 feet high. I mean, I have, you know, a good amount of sticks, but I was looking into buying, like, cages or wiring.
Yes,
but I wasn't
if you
sure.
go out to an independent garden center, a real nice garden center, they have the old-style conical tomato cages, but, like, three times as big. And the wire is very heavy, so that's good. What you would do is you would not remove the support you've given them so far. You would try to slide this tomato cage over it because you can't give tomatoes too much support. If you or somebody else is handy, even better would be to buy a roll of animal fencing and cut it into tubes that you could slide into the interior lip of the pot down below, and then the tomatoes would be growing inside that cage. But that's the basic idea. You want to support them. Now, they don't need to be sprayed with anything. Are they getting good sun?
Plenty of sun during the day, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. So what you want to do is feed them some compost. Is there any room on top of the planters?
I'd say so.
Okay.
I mean, maybe like an inch or two.
So get a good bag of premium compost, put a couple of inches of compost, whatever you can fit, right on top, and give them good support, and you should get great tomatoes throughout the season. Tomatoes need good sun, they need strong support, and they need a healthy soil. So instead of feeding them chemical fertilizers, you put that compost on the surface of the soil, and they will do great.
Great.
Now, if you're going to adopt this in future years, I want you to go to our website. Go to youbetyourgarden.org, click on Garden Answers A to Z, go to T, and there's probably 10, 15 short articles on how to grow tomatoes.
Sounds great.
I also have a book out there that's in its third edition. It's now called the You Bet Your Garden Guide to Growing Great Tomatoes. That would give you everything. But basically, support, compost, water them during dry spells, which has not been a problem lately, and you should get a great harvest.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, Kate.
Thank you.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn Ohio that I am coming to Dayton. I'll do a special WYSO member event Friday evening, October 2nd, a big public event on Saturday, October 3rd, and then get out of town before the villagers can find their pitchforks on Sunday. Now, don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because I'll be right back to give your compost a screen test and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. How to tell if that beautiful black compost really is black gold or the black death? We'll tell you two simple tests you can do at home that'll make you comfy with purchased compost. In the meantime, a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jenny, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, I had a question about my endless summer hydrangea.
Okay, I have those plants as well. Where are Jenny's endless summer hydrangeas?
I'm in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Right.
All right.
So they have not bloomed at all the last couple of years, and I understand that's related to the harsh winters that we've had. But this past winter was not as harsh, so they did come back and they started blooming again off the dead wood for the first time in a couple of years. But my blooms are about half the size of what they've been traditionally, and also about half the number.
Okay, so let's back up. Two seasons ago, we had the winter from Hades, and many people thought their herbaceous hydrangeas were completely dead because there was no sign of green until finally the plants started greening up. At least mine did in July, and which was very good because they put on enough green growth to absorb solar energy. Some people who live in a warm spot actually got a flower or two at the end of the season. But clearly they just didn't have enough time to flower. This past winter, I'm not sure that I agree with you about how much nicer it was. I thought it was pretty crappy. But I was pleased to see my hydrangeas green up on schedule and thought for sure that you must be right, so to speak, because this winter could not have been as harsh. The flowers appeared on time. And when they first appeared, I agree with you, they seemed to be a little small. But as of like today, most of them are full size and the smaller ones are still growing. So I have the same plant in the same region and had kind of the same thing as you. But right now, mine are filling out. One, I'm going to ask you to be patient. Two, I'll ask you the basic questions. Are they mulched? Are they fed? And are they growing near a treated lawn?
Yes, they're growing near a treated lawn. No, we did not mulch this year for the first time, though they've been mulched many years past. And I have been feeding them, and I know you don't like this, but with a non-organic, you know, just a chemical feeder.
You know, this is so funny because our staff hears this all the time. Nobody ever calls the show to say what great results they got from stuff like that. I mean, you're treating your lawn is a serious danger to yourself. You must know that. These lawn chemicals are really treacherous. They're a threat to groundwater. They're a threat to birds and amphibians. Lawns don't need them either. If you just cut your lawn at the right height with a sharp blade and feed it correctly, return the clippings to your lawn, you don't need any treatments. It's all a scam. It's all marketing. And my hydrangeas are doing much better than yours, and blooming wonderfully, and all they get is an inch of compost shoveled around their base once a season.
Okay.
You know, these concentrated chemical salts didn't exist, and yet we had one of the greenest planets imaginable long before these high explosives started to be packaged as fertilizer. So the more you lean towards nature, the better your plants are going to look. And I really worry when people acknowledge that they're treating their lawns. This stuff catches up on you, and I'm terrified of the idea of even adults but small children walking on those lawns barefoot.
All right, so just ease up all the treatments, and that'll help my plants in the long run.
Yeah, give them compost, no more wood mulch. That's death on a stick to these plants. And you know, the Pope is telling you to stop using herbicides. What? Who else do you have to? We'll ask the Dalai Lama when he comes to town.
Yeah, I'm waiting for him to weigh in.
Yeah, we know what he's going to say.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just stay patient with him then.
Right. And one thing with hydrangeas I'll leave you with, do not prune them until the flowers have fully appeared and opened. Then you can clean them up a little bit. But don't prune them in the spring or the fall.
Yeah, no, I try not to, although my husband's a bigger problem there. I need to make sure he hears you.
Either divorce him or put the pruners in a box and ship them to somebody in China and tell them to send them back to you in 6 months.
Good to know. I'll opt for the latter. Okay.
All right, Jenny.
Thanks very much.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ron, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mark.
Hello, Ron. How are you, sir?
Fine. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Ron. Where is Ron Fine?
Well, I live in northern Indiana, and right now I'm on US 30 heading into Philadelphia, but I'm heading back to Indiana.
Oh, okay. Are you a truck driver?
No, I'm just traveling for my job.
Oh, okay. So you're heading into Philadelphia. Where are you?
Well, I'm on U.S. 30, about 30 miles east of Philadelphia, I think.
Okay.
I'll know when I get there.
Yes, you will. You'll know it's Philadelphia when you see all the stopped cars and it's not a parking lot. It's supposed to be a highway. What can we do for Ron currently on the road?
Well, we have a little device in the garage that scares away mice, and it's silent, and it's a high-frequency sound emitter. I wondered if there could be such a device like that for squirrels as well to get squirrels out of the immediate vicinity of my home.
Okay, so do you want the bad news or the bad news?
Well, the bad and the bad.
The bad news is that such devices would not work against squirrels. The bad news is that these devices don't work against anything. They really don't repel mice or anything like that. They've been tested time and time again and shown not to work. Outlets like Consumer Reports have tested these things. No one's ever found them to work. And I remember a great bit here on the local news in Philadelphia years ago where one of their consumer reporters, brave woman, actually had this giant Pyrex tube filled with cockroaches. And she put the tube down on a table and she took one of these ultrasonic pest repellers and put it up against one end of the sealed Lucite tube. And they all came running towards it. You couldn't make it up. It was great.
Okay, well.
Okay, so
the thing of it.
Back to your squirrels. Are you feeding them or are you feeding bird seed outside?
Feeding birds, but not the squirrels.
You sure about that, Ron?
Well, we're trying not to feed the squirrels. We only purposely feed the birds.
Yes. People who have bird feeders that squirrels can get into are guaranteed to have endless squirrel troubles. The squirrels will dig in your garden. They will probably try to break into the top floor of your house and turn it into their rec room over the winter. I know people enjoy feeding birds seed, but you are inviting the squirrel. You are giving them dinner and a show. And as long as you have a bird feeder that they can access, you will not only never get rid of squirrels, but you will always have more squirrels.
Well, the bird feeders we have seem to be, they're on a rope and they have spinners on both ends.
And is there spilled seed underneath?
Yeah. There's just, that's all. Okay, I see what you mean. There's bird seed that gets knocked off on the ground, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's feeding squirrels. It's attracting mice and rats and voles. I only feed my birds suet. That gets rid of that problem. Now, what are they doing that's problematic for you?
Right now, they don't seem to be causing any problems.
Well, then I would suggest if you want to stop looking at them, stop feeding seed for a while. Just put it away. Over the winter, put out lots of suet feeders. You'll get all the birds you want, and they'll put on a great show for you. Hang the suet feeders where you can see them. And then as spring turns to summer, just put out lots of bird baths so the birds can get fresh water and get cleaned up. Even if you're going to go back to it in the future, take a break from seed feeding, and the squirrels will go to yards where there are seed feeders.
Okay, I got you. All right.
All right, Ron?
Appreciate your advice. Thank you.
Good luck, sir.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. The compost test. Is it black gold or the black plague? Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please read us this week's testy question.
I can do that, Mike. Zach in Phoenixville, PA writes, I've noticed a lot of leaf curl on my tomatoes and pepper plants this year, and this is the first year I've used the free compost that my town makes from all of the yard waste they collect. I've read that some of these newer lawn herbicides may not break down during the composting process. What do you think? Is there a lab that will test for herbicides?
Well, first, it may not be the compost. Most of the nation has had a really challenging season this year, and lots of our local plants have been severely stressed by the weirdly dry spring we had, followed by those really heavy rains. But to answer his question, yes, there are such tests, but they can be really expensive. And you need to have some idea of what you're looking for. Luckily, this suspect compost should already have been tested.
By the township?
Yeah. They should be testing for herbicide residues and toxic metals like lead and mercury. On a happier note, they should also know the values for the basic plant nutrients it contains.
NPK, right? Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Well, definitely phosphorus and potassium, but maybe not nitrogen. It's too ephemeral, here today and gone tomorrow. The, quote, percentage of organic matter is a better guide to how basically nutritious compost is going to be. It's a much more stable value.
Why is that?
Well, the air we breathe is mostly nitrogen, and every time you turn compost, some of its nitrogen escapes to play with its cousins in the atmosphere. But that's unavoidable. Frequent turning is an integral part of the process of making really good compost on a large scale.
Well, what happens to the nitrogen that goes into the air?
It comes back. It has to come back. An element cannot be created or destroyed, only changed in form. You know, there are theories that much of our inherent soil nitrogen is delivered when atmospheric nitrogen is concentrated by lightning strikes. Anyway, a basic test for bulk compost should also include the pH, and that's a really important number to know, and maybe even some micronutrients as well.
Okay, so township compost should come with paper.
All bulk compost should come with paper, but you have to ask for it. And some smaller suppliers may be many deliveries down the line from the original maker, and they may honestly not have anything like that handy. A municipality that made the compost should always have good paper, and you should always be able to easily get it.
So what would you look for?
I'd certainly want to know the pH so I could adjust it if I wanted to. And that organic matter content. I'm looking for the higher, the better. After that, I'd test it myself for the two other things I consider important.
What, in your bat lab?
No, Robin. Diabolical evil might escape even the most sophisticated scientific apparatus, but the most fiendish of foes will be revealed with the use of two ordinary plant containers.
If you expect me to say holy hidden horticulture, Batman, you are sadly mistaken.
Ah, girl wonder. They don't make sidekicks like they used to. Anyway, get a sample of the compost you're thinking about acquiring. Enough to fill a couple of plant pots that hold a quarter to a soil each. Fill them both with the compost under audition. Just water one of them thoroughly and keep that compost moist. In the other one, plant vegetable seeds that you know are fresh and keep that compost moist as well. Beans or peas that were packed for the current gardening season would be ideal for this.
Why peas or beans?
Well, our listener is correct. There are some relatively new persistent lawn herbicides that are not broken down during the composting process. And they can kill plants by surviving in the finished compost at very low concentrations. A couple of parts per billion is all it takes.
Parts per billion?
Yeah, there have been more than a few cases of killer compost that tested clean at the parts per million level. The herbicide residues were only discovered when they used more sensitive tests that detected these almost impossibly small amounts. Peas and beans are very sensitive to these plant-killing chemicals. So if they're present, the sprouts that come up will show the signs of herbicide damage.
Good to know. What's the unplanted one for?
Ah, that's to check for weeds. If the compost wasn't piled high enough or turned often enough, it could contain viable weed seeds. You want the compost alone container to not sprout anything after you keep it moist at room temperature for 10 days or so.
So is it then good to go, or is there something else people should look for?
Well, I think you should always perform what our old friend, retired Maryland Extension agent and renowned compost expert Dr. Frank Gowen calls the duck test. Sniff it. It should be rich and earthy with no sour or other bad smells. Look at it. It should be nicely black in color, and you shouldn't see any wood chips or other raw, uncomposted materials. And squeeze it. It should be neither dry nor overly wet.
So if it looks like good compost, smells like good compost, and feels like good compost,
it's a duck. Well, that sure was some good advice about testing your compost for weeds and worries, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes! My producer is threatening to mulch me with suspect stuff if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse. As long as you include your location, to garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about where you live. But you will find answers to all your garden questions, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our perpetually popular podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and celebrate our 5,000th like at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz keeps our website up and running. Mostly, except for that thing with the podcast. Oh, and with the other podcast. And Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. And Rich helped me figure out how to use my Chromebook, which she did not, so I guess we're even. Al Banks is our editor. He only knows the Chrome on a 57 Chevy. Our new intern, Stephen Dre, like the horse, hoe like the tool, and bull like the farm animal, is still here. You know, maybe these college kids aren't as smart as we thought. I'm sharp as an orange, Mike McGrath. And I got so many bookings coming up, I feel like a desk sergeant in a bad neighborhood. I got more bookings than Jay Leno. I got more than Sharon. She's double booked. And you'll probably hear me making a spontaneous public appearance in a produce section near you until I can see you again next week. A lot of people turn to fertilizers that have the numbers 10-10-10 on their labels. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal why that's one of the worst things you can give to your plants and why equal numbers are actually unbalanced. Plus your unbalanced phone calls.